You are listening to ListCast. If you'd like to get in touch with us, leave a comment, or perhaps suggest a top 5 list for us to do on the show, you can drop us a line at listcast5@gmail.com or visit our website at listcast.podomatic.com. Now on with the show. You're listening to ListCast, and I'm Josh.
And I'm Justin.
Today we're going to do our top 5 things we like from the Star Wars prequels. We did this because most people have decided that the Star Wars prequels are not any good.
And we're not suggesting that they are.
Well, the general majority, it seems to me, is that they were disappointing, they weren't any good. And I didn't like them myself, but I don't mean to sound like a critical jerk-off. But I didn't like them. I found them very unsatisfying compared to the originals.
Well, I agree.
So we decided to try to find, to nitpick, and try to find 5 things that we do like. And this was really hard for me.
Well, yeah, you know, this was your idea. You know, I suggested first that we pick 5 of the worst things that we don't like from the prequel trilogy. And you said, well, there's tons of people that have done that. Let's go different. Let's try and find things that we do like.
I don't remember having this conversation.
Yeah, you did. So, okay. And I think that's cool. So, hence, we're doing it right now.
All right. And so, Justin's going to start us off today with his number 5, because I don't know exactly how we're going to go about this.
Okay. So. Now, there's a couple things that I have left that could be honorable mentions in case you nail one of the things that I did, because I think there's a chance we might run into some of the same things.
Okay.
But anyway, starting off here, number 5 is going to be Qui-Gon Jinn, the character of Qui-Gon Jinn.
Nah, not on my list.
Well, he's my number 5.
I didn't like Qui-Gon.
I
thought the idea of Qui-Gon was silly.
Why?
It just broke up the mythos that was set up in the original trilogy.
Of the whole business of
Well,
Obi-Wan
still, you
having
think Obi-Wan
trained.
Would have mentioned Qui-Gon or something. Well, it just seemed... I like Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
I love Liam Neeson.
Yeah.
You know, along with William Hurt. Almost the same guy. It just seems they're just very good actors, and I love seeing him play right. Jedi. But the idea of that character just didn't make a whole lot of sense. Although he was one of the few good things about The Phantom Menace,
well,
I will agree about that.
I understand what you're saying, that he was certainly not referred to in any way in the original trilogy by Obi-Wan. But in the context of the original trilogy, there was really no need to bring him up. So there's certainly room to, you know, it's not like the character of Qui-Gon Jinn was somehow not plausible, you know. And in any case, I enjoy the character of Qui-Gon Jinn. I felt that the way he was depicted was really cool because he's
the only character in the movie when you think about it.
Well, no, it's just that he had an ego. He had an ego about him.
A little bit.
And he was a little pompous.
Yeah.
And, you know, especially with his dealings with the council and him believing that
Anakin was the bullshit chosen one. I'm talking about honestly, when you look at that movie, Qui-Gon is the only character in the movie that actually has any kind of
character. Oh, I agree. You know, Obi-Wan doesn't have any character in the first one.
Well, you can tell that. I think that's an effort from Liam Neeson. Mm-hmm. To give something to the character, because well, there wasn't much for anybody to go off of.
Right, yes, that's true. But you know, Liam Neeson in the character of Qui-Gon had the opportunity because he not only had to be the Jedi Master to Obi-Wan, but he had to be a sort of quote unquote father figure to Anakin, and he had to be the wise Jedi to the Council. He had a lot of shoes to fill, and that gave him the opportunity to be a little more fleshed out, you know, than say Obi-Wan, who was very two-dimensional. It was the fact that he was not perfect. I really enjoyed Obi-Wan, and I'll talk about him later. Obi-Wan was kind of like your perfect Jedi. You know, he was a by the book, by the numbers Jedi. Qui-Gon clearly was not. Even to the point where Obi-Wan mentions it. He goes, don't defy the council again, Master.
Well, I wish they would have, delved deeper into the fact that he wasn't perfect. They didn't, really.
Yeah, I know. It was just glossed over. I wish he hadn't died, because I really enjoyed his character. But the fact that he was kind of flawed, And his flaw was in his ego, which, you know, I would like to think was not an accident, because that was Anakin's flaw. Anakin's flaw was his big damn ego. And Qui-Gon, obviously he wasn't bad, but he certainly had that quality about him that if he thought he was doing the right thing, he could potentially do things that, you know, we the audience would perceive as bad. But if he's got it in his head that this is the right thing to do, just like with training Anakin, damn it, he was going to do it and fuck everybody else. And I kind of like that. It was, he was a good guy, but he was kind of just off to the side, and he was definitely an independent player. He was not a big team player, and I liked that about him. And he definitely exuded this kind of wise quality, not Yoda wise, but you're like, yeah, I'd want him to be my Jedi Master. He's pretty fucking cool, and he looks awesome. I mean, he's Liam Neeson. He's so damn tall. You know, he's intimidating just to be near him. But you know, just that dinner scene when they get to Tatooine. He's working the kid in his own little way. He's working the mom. He's telling Jar Jar, you know, stop your bullshit and all that. He is the guy in the room.
Has anybody ever seen a pod race?
They're pod racing on Malastare. Very fast, very dangerous.
I'm the only human who can do it.
You must have Jedi reflexes if you race pods. Don't do that again.
You're a Jedi Knight, aren't you?
What makes you think that?
I saw your laser sword. Only Jedis carry that kind of weapon.
Perhaps I killed a Jedi and took it from him.
I don't think so. No one can kill a Jedi.
I wish that were so.
I had a dream I was a Jedi. I came back here and freed all the slaves. Have you come to free us?
No, I'm afraid not.
I think you have. Why else would you be here?
And I like that about him. But anyway, that's my number five. Let's go to your five.
All right.
Not making any sense.
My list is very nitpicky.
That's fine.
In terms, a character is a large thing. And Qui-Gon is a large part of the movie.
Unfortunately, he's a very small part of the trilogy as a whole.
Okay. I tried to order these in terms of how much I like them.
All right. That's
okay. So my number five is, I've titled it, Badass Female Assassin / Bounty Hunter from Attack of the Clones.
What?
The Changeling Bounty
Hunter. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. What? You liked that?
This is my list.
Okay.
Okay. I'm trying to find things that I like in it. Is what I'm saying.
And no, I understand that. I'm just surprised that you liked it.
I didn't really like it. I liked the way... Okay, I liked the actress. She was very attractive.
Yes, the girl...
I liked her. Her outfit.
Sure, she looked cool.
I liked the idea of a female badass bounty female bounty hunter. Yeah. I like that. The whole concept of her character is ridiculous. She didn't need to
In the plot of the movie, yes, it made absolutely no sense.
You know, Django.
The bounty hunter hiring a bounty hunter is...
Django could have easily taken care of
himself. Could have done the job. I know, it's ridiculous.
And the fact that he gave her, you know, poisonous worms to do the job, which...
He could have just hopped in his car and gone over and done it himself.
Well, it was just completely ridiculous. Why does he have these things? Why didn't he just give her a bomb or whatever?
I hit the ship, but they used a decoy.
We'll have to try something more subtle this time, Sam. My client is getting impatient. Take these. Be careful, they're very poisonous. And Sam, there can be no mistakes this time.
Well, not only...
The fact that they used the bomb in the beginning of the movie, right?
Right, and...
And now they're using poisonous worms? It just doesn't make any sense.
I know, and you know, given that she...
I liked the character's look.
Right.
And I liked the actress.
Yes, she was.
I don't think it was necessary to be a changeling. Whatever.
Yeah, that was just something to that was throw just, more CG in.
That was just silly. I was like, why can't she just be human? Why does it have to be something CG again? Let her be human.
I know.
Okay?
Or just an alien that looks human. Yeah.
Yeah. I liked the bar setting when they go into it with her. It's kind of dark and...
It's a club.
It's misty.
Star Wars,
you know?
Club.
Well, it's still too bright and clean, but it was something
kind of grungy.
Yeah, it was something a little grungy. That's a good
word.
Well,
they were on Coruscant, which is kind of a, you know, it's It's a nicer place to be.
Well, it was still
that's the L.A. of there.
Still a darker atmosphere than the rest of this trilogy. It was nice to be. It was kind of a seedy place,
right?
Even though it was still pretty clean. You know?
Well, you got. I mean, if you're comparing it to say like the Cantina in A New Hope, I mean that's on a dirt planet for God's sake, and a hole in the universe.
Yeah.
This is a, you know, club bar on Coruscant.
I know what it is. I just meant
that. I'm just saying. So, of course, it's going to have a more clean.
Seeing that character in that room, seeing the Jedi in that room because they were following her. I like that.
Right.
I mean, what they did with the scene was.
Of course, if Django had done the job, Django just would have flown over to the window on his jetpack, dumped the shit in, and been gone, and they never would have caught him. But what the fuck?
Yeah, I know. We can talk about the flaws.
All right.
I'm just talking about the parts I like.
She looks really cool.
That's what I was saying. I was nitpicking this.
Okay. I'm sorry.
That's my number five.
All right. Cool.
What's your number four?
My number four is that Darth Maul dies in episode one. And when I say this, I'm not saying it's cool because Darth Maul is kind of like very two-dimensional and not Darth Vader. And so they killed him. So I'm like, yay, he died.
Well, I could have really cared less.
What I mean is that...
That he died or not.
When we went into episode one, a buddy of mine...
He didn't even have a character, well, so I didn't care that he died.
Bear with me. A buddy of mine, whenever any one of these new trilogies came out, he went on Star Wars Blackout. He would not look at the trailers, he wouldn't read anything, so when he sat down to watch that movie in the theater, he literally had no idea what was going to happen. Clean slate. And I got to admire him for that, because I did not have that sort of willpower.
Nobody did.
But what I did do is not read anything online. But I did watch the trailers. And based on the trailers, you have no idea if Darth Maul is going to be a fleshed out, three-dimensional character, whatever. But based on the trailer, he looked fucking awesome. Because some of his moments looked the coolest.
Yeah. I never liked the way he looked.
I thought he looked pretty cool. But anyway.
I thought the horns were a bit ridiculous. Well, and the face paint. I mean, is that his face? Or does he actually paint himself up every day?
No. From what I've read...
Yeah,
his species, whatever they are, what we see, what looks to be paint or whatever, is body tattooing, and it's kind of like their tradition to body tattoo themselves. I think that's kind of cool. And I've actually seen in a toy store they had a topless Darth Maul just in his black pants and no top, and that tattoo, you know, went down his body. It was mostly his body was mostly black, and they had, you know, I think it was red or yellow or whatever the color was, the other color. It went down his chest into some cool pattern. He looked pretty fucking
awesome.
Okay,
well, we're talking about the fact
that
he
died. In either case, the fact that he died. Yeah. Like I said, I'd only seen the trailers. So, as far as I knew going in, he was going to be this trilogy's Darth Vader. So, I thought he was going to span the all three movies. Most people probably assumed it.
Yeah.
So, when he got cut in half, I was genuinely surprised. Most of this movie I saw coming. But this
maybe
particular
that was a mistake.
Part...
I mean, maybe that didn't... Well, because in each prequel movie, they had a new villain.
And
maybe that was a mistake.
Well,
it didn't give us time to learn about any of the characters.
I'll grant you that, because if you look at Vader in A New Hope, he's just as two-dimensional as Darth Maul.
There's not much attention.
He didn't start to develop until Empire,
right.
Really. But nevertheless, I mean, certainly he didn't
have
much
character. Well, there's more to Vader than, you know... In that New Hope, and Darth Maul had. Darth Maul didn't even say anything.
I'll grant you that.
What did he say? Two sentences in the whole movie?
He didn't talk much, but he had potential because he was very mysterious and all of that. But in either case, I was still very surprised that he was offed. And I was like, whoa, that's pretty cool. In fact, I remember reading that originally he got slashed or whatever happened, and he just fell down that chute in one piece. And Lucas wanted to make it abundantly clear that he was dead. So in post-production, they digitally separated him and had him, so there was no question that he was dead. And I thought that was cool, because here's this guy who just offed Qui-Gon Jinn. And so now you're like, holy shit, this guy's a real badass. And then Obi-Wan, after, you know, like 2 minutes of fighting, halves him, you know, and I've been halved! I remember making a comment to that very buddy of mine who goes on Star Wars Blackout. You know, I was like, I don't know about that. You know, here's Darth Maul, this badass in his prime Jedi. And he's like, yeah, but that's Obi-Wan in his prime. So, you know, Obi-Wan's a pretty badass Jedi himself. So, I just thought it was really cool. I thought it was cool that the big baddie that we kind of probably unconsciously
expect to continue. The way they painted Obi-Wan... In the prequel trilogy, was that he was never a great Jedi.
What?
They never... Like, when he was going up against in Attack of the Clones when he was going up against Count Dracula.
Count Dooku. Dooku.
he was really got his ass handed to him really easily by Dooku.
He did, but although it wasn't always depicted properly, they certainly did pay lip service to the fact that Jedi are, you know, it's more about what's in their head.
Well, and he admitted Dooku that he needed. Around a long he time. Admitted that he needed help. To right. Anakin, he said, "I need him. I need your help to take him because I can't take him by myself.
I can't take him myself." I thought that was pretty cool of Obi-Wan to even admit that.
Well, that's something Qui-Gon never would have said.
No, Qui-Gon was an ego.
Qui-Gon didn't say to Obi-Wan, "I can't take this, you know, no-name character by myself. I need your help."
Yeah,
Qui-Gon never said that. No.
Well, he didn't really have.
That just seemed like That seems like something Obi-Wan wouldn't have said either. It just seemed against his character.
Even I don't think so.
If he was younger and brash. He never... In his older age, he didn't seem like that.
Obi-Wan never came off as brash to me. He came off as very by the numbers, like I said. And if you're thinking logically, you go, if I can't take this guy...
He didn't seem that way in the original trilogy is what I mean. I mean, there must have been some serious character changing when he was on Tatooine for all that time.
Well, yeah. The big... straw that broke the camel's back was the fact that he had to, in his head, do in his best friend, which was Anakin. You know,
well, so were they really friends? I mean,
he thought so up until you know.
They didn't seem like great friends to me.
Well, that's called bad writing.
Oh, can we move on now?
All right, whatever. Are we on to year four? Yeah, we're on to year four.
This is really lame. It might be on your list, but it's really small.
Try it.
From episode 3, Revenge of the Sith. My number 4 is...
Don't do it.
What?
I'm just praying to God it's not what I do.
Yoda?
No.
Yoda does the force push against the royal guards.
Oh, okay.
It's very small.
You mean when
moment.
He walks into the Emperor's chambers?
And he just goes, whoosh.
Yeah.
It comes out of nowhere, and I didn't see it with a large audience in the theater. It's a very small audience, but it caught us all off guard. We all kind of giggled a little bit.
Right.
It wasn't funny, but it was surprising, and, oh, that was cool.
Yeah.
And it lasted a fraction of a second, and then the movie continued to be what it was after that. But it was nice seeing those two guys in costume, because it's something you recognize.
Well, I guess just, you know, to briefly recap, I mean, anyone probably knows what we're talking about, but when all the shit has really hit the fan towards the third act or so of Revenge of the Sith, Yoda has gone to confront the Emperor, and it just cuts to this wide shot. And the Emperor's on the left side of the screen, and the door is on the right, and it opens up, and there's the Emperor's royal bodyguards on each side of the door, and Yoda just strolls in and just waves his hand like he's going, "Oh, you fucking people."
See, that's the kind of force power Yoda should have been using.
Yes.
Not pulling out his lightsaber and jumping around like a grasshopper.
I know, I absolutely agree, and I did see it with a packed house, and when that moment came, that was kind of a moment that everyone had been waiting for, not just that moment, but just a kind of cool Star Wars moment where everyone went, yeah,
that kind of thing, and seeing the costumes of the royal guards, because you
recognize
them.
Even though they were blue. They were blue in the prequels. They're red and Jedi and everything.
No, they were red.
At this point, they were red? Because I remember at the end of episode 1, they were blue.
And okay, that was whatever. Like, they were red in this, is what I'm saying.
Fine.
It was nice seeing that. And also, kind of the same notion, seeing the corridors of whatever ship that is.
The Tantive IV?
Yeah, that's in A New Hope.
Yeah.
When you get a glimpse of it, you're like...
I know, you're like, oh, there's Star Wars.
There's something I recognize. There's something good in that.
It's kind of like seeing the moisture farm in episode 2.
Well, I think it was a bigger shock to see the corridor.
Well, I'll grant you, but still, it's something that you see.
A desert is a desert, but that corridor was the opening of A New Hope.
But you know, it's the dome that Luke grew up in.
So, but anyway, the force push.
All right, that's cool.
It. That's my number 4.
All right, so my number 3 then is...
I wish it hadn't been a CG Yoda doing it.
I know, whatever. Don't get started. All right, my number 3 is, and I kind of tackled this a little bit with Qui-Gon, but I mean this as a whole, that the Jedi are either shown to be or are referred to as being, or are having problems with their ego. And there's a moment, I want to say it's in episode 2, somewhere in episode 2, I think, when Obi-Wan is talking to Mace Windu and Yoda, and he's talking about Anakin and how his powers have gotten the best of him.
No, he says his powers have made him arrogant.
Arrogant, yeah, arrogant, that's the word I'm looking for, arrogant. And Yoda says, yeah, that's kind of a common problem, unfortunately.
I am concerned for my Padawan. He is not ready to be given this assignment on his own yet. The Council is confident in its decision, Obi-Wan.
The boy has exceptional skills.
But he still has much to learn, Master. His abilities have made him, well, arrogant.
Yes, yes. A flaw more and more common among Jedi. Too sure of themselves they are. Even the older, more experienced ones.
Remember, Obi-Wan, if the prophecy is true, your apprentice is the only one who can bring the Force back into balance.
And I think that was just really cool that at least they paid lip service to the fact that, you know, these are people that are...
It's a bad lip service.
Well, whatever, but it was acknowledged that these people, the Jedi, have powers beyond that of their, you know, species or whatever they should be. And that even though they're good, arrogance can be a quality that even the good people have. You know, arrogance does not just mean you're a bad guy. And Qui-Gon had it. Qui-Gon was arrogant.
Is this your choice?
Yeah.
Okay, you didn't actually state it specifically.
No, it's the fact
that... I thought this was a prelude to your choice.
No, this
okay,
is...
I'm sorry.
That you know, the Jedi acknowledged to have this problem.
Okay, so you like
arrogance.
The fact they just paid lip service to it? Is that
what
you're saying?
They paid lip service to it in that scene, but it is kind of...
Well, it seems like all you're...
Shown throughout... I mean, honestly,
I mean, you're not
Anakin,
condoning the portrayal of Anakin, are you?
Well, no, Anakin obviously is supposed to be that way.
Yeah, but the way they did it was...
Well, no, that's way over the top, obviously. No. Qui-Gon did it in a way that I liked. It was a little more subtle and all of that. And you kind of have to really look at what he's doing. But also, you see it in the Council. You know, these guys are ego and arrogance. They think they've got it all figured out. And they don't want to listen to Qui-Gon when he's got a solution or a
question. Yeah, but the way they painted it was...
I'm not saying the
execution. They painted them as being arrogant, but also being always righteous.
That's why they were very self-righteous. It's
no,
just
no,
like
no, no,
what
that's not what I meant. Yeah, they were self-righteous. No, but what I mean is the writing always portrayed them. Yes, they were doing arrogant, but it never shined the light on their arrogance. They were always right and true and always good. But yeah, they're full of themselves.
Well, I like that even
Look at
Yoda.
Mace.
And
Mace is a fucking asshole. But all the Jedi are always, oh, they're so wise, and they can't, the Jedi fight for good.
I mean, look at the way, even, like I said, it's just like how you pointed out.
I mean, what does Anakin say in episode, fucking whatever, where he says, the Sith think inward, the Jedi think outward, or something. The Sith think only
you
about themselves.
That so much,
okay,
I don't even know what you're
referring to. The Sith think inward, only about themselves, the Jedi only care about others. Right. That is fucking bullshit.
That's bullshit. I know, in episode 2, again, this is an Anakin reference, but you know, he's got his own issues, but it certainly is indicative of what the Jedi are kind of portrayed as in the prequels when they go into that bar chasing the bounty hunter.
Yeah.
And Anakin's all, relax, everybody, this is Jedi business. He's like, he's like, you little people, don't bother us, we're doing our own thing.
No, that was just retarded. What is he, Serpico?
Jedi business, go back to your drinks.
Okay, no, look.
I hated that.
I'm saying, just like you're pointing out of the bounty hunter, you thought the execution wasn't necessarily done right, but the idea and the look and everything was cool. It's just like with this. The execution wasn't what I
liked. The idea of it is what you mean.
Yeah, the idea I like, not necessarily the execution. So,
okay.
Anyway, moving on. What's your three?
Okay, nitpicking again.
Fine.
Very small thing. This would be Padme's Buck Rogers kind of... Princess Leia outfit from Attack of the Clones.
To be more specific, that's Colonel Deering's outfit from Buck Rogers.
That's what I mean. Well, yeah. But, you know, the white...
Beautifully formed by Aaron Gray. Oh, mama.
Yeah, well, okay.
Yeah, the obvious ripoff of Buck Rogers.
Yeah, I've got a problem with it. I wished it wasn't so...
easily ripped in two.
Well, so sexual. It didn't need to be.
See, now, it wasn't sexual until it was the belly was exposed.
Whatever. I mean, even when she was not.
Yeah, it was kind of
It was very form-fitting, very, you know,
yeah.
You know, showing off the body is what
yes.
I mean. When you look at Princess Leia in Empire, she's wearing something very similar, but it's not showing off her body.
It doesn't feel sexual.
No, yes. It's obviously something that's very casual in
right,
that
no,
universe.
Yeah.
I wish it was something more like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, that's something I'd like to bring up. A problem that I have with the prequel. There's a lot of problems. One of the problems I have, I mean, I'm saying that I like what she's wearing. You know, because it reminded me of Princess Leia. It reminded me of Buck Rogers.
Right.
I don't like the idea that it was torn.
No,
like
that was way too blatant. That was insulting.
It was, honestly.
You're like, come on, we've already got a hard-on for Natalie Portman. You
yeah.
don't need to do that.
The fact that she changes clothes all the motherfucking time. This woman would not have time to do anything because she's changing clothes all the fucking time.
Right.
It's ridiculous.
Well, she
How does she get anything done? Every time a new scene starts, even if no time has gone by, she's wearing something different. It's ridiculous.
She is. But they look good.
I'm not saying that they don't, but it's ridiculous.
I know.
Why does she have to change clothes so much? You know?
Well, if she goes
from her room to the Senate chambers, she changed clothes.
I know, but for all we know, it doesn't actually take place in the same day or whatever. Like
when Obi-Wan says in episode one, he's talking to Qui-Gon over their little comm transmitter. He's like, do we have anything to barter with? And he said, I don't know, maybe her wardrobe, which makes you wonder, how much shit does she actually have that they consider bartering with it?
Right, right.
So, come on.
Well, it's got all those jewels and shit on it.
But, yeah, I mean, obviously, the fact that they said wardrobe, she brought it with her.
All right. You know? Well, she's a queen. I mean, she has
what is she,
image.
Princess Vespa from Spaceballs, for Christ's sake?
What the hell is all that?
It's Her Royal Highness's matched luggage.
What?
Her Royal Highness's matched luggage.
Matched luggage, huh? What, she think this is a princess cruise?
It's her Royal Highness's matched luggage.
Hairdryer. And I can't live without
it. You would expect her to have something like that, for Christ's sake.
I said take only what you need to survive.
It's my industrial strength hairdryer. And I can't live without it!
Okay, princess. That's it. The fairy tale is over. Welcome to real life. You want this hot air machine? You carry it.
But anyway, I was talking about her outfit because it reminded me of Buck Rogers, right. Because it reminded me of Princess Leia. It's something visual, it's something superficial, but I liked it.
That's cool.
That's my number three. And the fact that she doesn't change out of it for a while. She's in it for pretty much the whole second half of the movie.
Yeah, she is.
So I like that part, too.
Well, you know, I know she changes outfits a lot, but you know, if you look at even Jedi, Leia's in like four or five outfits in the movie because of the change of locales.
Well, in Empire, she was in that, you know, white getup for the whole movie.
No. I mean,
they were on
Hoth for a while, and so she was in her cold outfit. Then they were on the Falcon. She was in a totally other outfit.
Saying, she wasn't wearing these outlandish things like Natalie Portman.
No, they weren't. But yeah, I mean, I get it. I understand.
Okay, we're nitpicking even more, so let's just go into your number whatever.
Two?
Number two?
Yeah, we're on to my number two.
Okay.
Okay, character again. I'm going to say Obi-Wan Kenobi. Stop.
Okay, I have this. I have this as an alternative.
All right.
But I really didn't want to mention it. The fact that they got Ewan McGregor to play young Obi-Wan.
Yes, he's awesome.
But his portrayal of Obi-Wan... There was nothing there.
Stay with me. All right, now...
And that's not his fault.
No, it's not his fault. No, I'm not blaming him. Now, I'm not saying he was perfectly done in it. Like you just said, it's not his fault. In the first one, he's totally two-dimensional. I'm not even talking about the first one, really. But more from two to three. Well, even if you count the first one, because he in the first one, even though he was two-dimensional, he did come off as... And I don't mean this in a bad way, but young and... still learning things, even though he was ready to be considered a knight versus a Padawan, which I think technically he was. And then when you get to episode two, he's grown up, he's got his beard, he's filled out a little bit, you're like, hey, this is kind of turning into the Obi-Wan that we know. And then by the third one, his looks changed a little more, he looks a little more seasoned, a little more rich. And what I like about, one of the things that I like that Obi-Wan did, or what Ewan did with Obi-Wan, is that he comes across as very cool and level-headed. You know, he doesn't, unlike Anakin, he does not react emotionally. Like I said, he's very by the numbers and very by the book.
Well, unfortunately, he never shows any emotions, which made him kind of a stale character.
That's not true. Take, for example, the arena fight in episode 2. Not the best piece of cinema ever to be put out.
Yeah.
But when he's dueling away with some of the monsters and all that, you know, when he's chomping at those monsters, he could just be like, boom, boom, move on to the next one. But there's almost this little bit that you kind of get that he gets a satisfaction that he won, and he kind of twirls that lightsaber a couple more times than he needs to before he, you know, jabs it into someone's brain or something like that. And he looks pissed by the end of that battle before the clone troopers come dropping in.
Yeah.
You know, he's breathing hard, he's sweaty, And you're like, okay, he's earning this, and he's really selling it. And
so then, would you consider Attack the Clones the best?
Of the three?
Well, in terms of Obi-Wan, his character.
I don't know. I'd have to think about that. In the second one, he has, you know, for us, his first starting of problems with Anakin, where Anakin pops off when they first meet Padme again.
Yeah. I mean, how did they be... I mean, when you look at the transition that happens between 2 and 3, in part 2, Anakin is this whiny, bitchy, and Obi-Wan is just saying, shut the fuck up, listen to what I'm saying. And in the beginning of part 3, obviously a couple of years have gone by.
Yeah,
they're buddy-buddy. They're more chummy. Battles. Yeah, but they're too chummy. Way too chummy. It seems that the way Obi-Wan was treating him in episode 2, he was never going to have any respect for this douchebag. Not in the way they painted it. Is that they were equals, friends.
Well, the way I think they made their relationship.
The way they painted him in Attack of the Clones is that I don't want to hang around with you, Anakin. I'm only training you because Qui-Gon asked me.
No. I think they were perfectly fine, those two, like, as characters, not from us watching it. I think they were perfectly cool with each other until that fucking elevator door opened and Anakin came face to face with Padme again. That's what changed their relationship. Up until then,
I haven't seen you this nervous till you fell in that nest of gun dogs. You fell into that nest, Master, and I rescued you.
I know. But up until that door opened, they were cool because no she bitch got in the way.
Yeah, she bitch. Let's go.
the second he saw her again, bang, he got a Woody, and that was it. He was like, fuck you, I want her.
It's a great pleasure to see you again, my lady.
And it's been far too long, Master Kenobi. Annie? My goodness, you've grown.
So have you. Grown more beautiful, I mean. Well, for a senator, I mean.
Annie, you'll always be that little boy I knew on Tatooine.
And that's pretty much the attitude he put out. He's like, I don't really care what you think. I'm trying to get in her pants. And that was it. That's what started, you know, the kind of downfall for a while. Yeah. And that comes off, even though God knows we all
hate
it.
What does he say in the fire scene? You know? You were in my very soul, tormenting me.
I'm not even going to talk about that.
If you are in as much pain as I am, please tell me.
You are in my very soul, tormenting me. What can I do? I will do anything that you ask. If you're suffering as much as I am, please tell me.
I can't. We can't. It's just not possible.
Anything is possible, Padme. Listen to me.
No, you listen. We live in a real world. Come back to it. You're studying to become a Jedi. I'm a senator. If you follow your thoughts through to conclusion, it'll take us to a place we cannot go. Regardless of the way we feel about each other.
Then you do feel something.
I will not let you give up your future for me.
You are asking me to be rational. That is something I know I cannot do. Believe me, I wish that I could just wish away my feelings. But I can't.
I will not give in to this.
But I can't date you. I'm a senator.
Okay,
I don't
stop. I'm trying to make a point here, man.
Sorry.
Their relationship in episode 2 was a lot like Qui-Gon's and Obi-Wan's in episode 1.
Not really.
No, only in that it did feel very mentor.
Yeah, it's mentor trainee. Sure.
And that you feel in episode 2 with Anakin and Obi-Wan. By the time you get to 3, Anakin's skill level and maturity level, he's ready to become a Jedi Knight. He's ready to run on his own. So that sense, like you said, of camaraderie, they feel more like equals, I think is accurate and a nice progression of him starting from the kid to the student teacher to more like equals, because Obi-Wan's kind of taught him everything he can. Now it's more like they're partners. And, you know, you get the feel Anakin's probably ready to take the trials or whatever and become his own thing. And especially the way he is in episode 3 when he knows that, or when he's given the order that he has to kill Anakin. I love how he did it. You know, and if I don't think I would have felt the same way if Ewan McGregor hadn't added everything
up. You mean when he says, oh, he's like a brother to me, I can't
Well, when Yoda tells him, you're going to have to go take care of Anakin. He doesn't actually say, you're going to kill Anakin, but we all know what
he's
telling
him. Does he have to say, take care of?
I don't know what he says. Okay. He says, you know, make him sleep with the fishes or something. Okay. But it's pretty clear that he's being instructed to go kill him, because there's not going to be any talking him down at this point.
Send me to kill the Emperor. I will not kill Anakin.
To fight this Lord Sidious, strong enough, you are not.
He is like my brother. I cannot do it.
Twisted by the dark side, young Skywalker has become. The boy you trained, gone he is, consumed by Darth Vader.
I do not know where the Emperor has sent him. I don't know where to look.
Use your feelings, Obi-Wan, and find him you will.
And Obi-Wan, Ewan McGregor, I think did a really good job of, you know, showing the anguish and pain that he was going through in having to kill his friend.
Padme, I must find him.
You're going to kill him, aren't you?
He has become a very great threat.
I can't.
Anakin is the father, isn't he? I'm so sorry.
I really liked it. I liked it. Fuck. Whatever. I'm done talking. Okay. Give me your two.
My number two?
Why do you let me fucking go on so long?
I don't want to be a dickhole and, you know, cut you off saying you're talking too long, you faggot.
Well, do it next time.
Okay, my number two is nothing visual. It's something auditory.
Alrighty.
It's music. Specifically, this is not the scene in which it... itself, but the music in the scene. This is the immolation scene. The music immolation. You know, it's called the immolation scene.
Right. I'm trying to think of the music.
Well, damn, I can't.
Yeah, I know.
Sing it, and I can't hum it. But
I can't for the life of me even think where the music is in that scene.
It starts. I think before he starts burning, when Obi-Wan's going off in his diatribe about how he loves him and thinks of him as a brother and how he betrayed him or whatever. It slowly builds and then hits a high mark when he starts to burn.
Right.
The music itself, I didn't particularly like the scene. The fact that they're on a lava planet and then he burns or whatever. Whatever. The scene I hate. The whole fight leading up to it I don't like.
Yeah, it's like 30 minutes too long.
It's ridiculous. It is.
You have allowed this Dark Lord to twist your mind until now you have become the very thing you swore to destroy.
Don't lecture me, Obi-Wan. I see through the lies of the Jedi. I do not fear the dark side as you do. I have brought peace, freedom, justice, and security to my new empire.
Your new empire?
Don't make me kill you.
Anakin, my allegiance is to the Republic, to democracy!
If you're not with me, then you're my enemy.
Only a Sith deals in absolutes. I will do what I must.
You will try.
Yeah, I'm not saying that they didn't put a lot of work into it. Obviously they did.
Right.
But it's not what I would have done, but I didn't do this. This is what Lucas wanted to do. But anyway, just the music itself, I really like. And probably my favorite track from all of them, that's why I'm choosing this, from all of the prequels, my favorite track. I won't mention another piece of music, maybe because it might be...
It's not. Go ahead and mention it.
Duel of the Fates. I didn't like...
That's a really good track.
I like it by itself. I didn't like the way it's used. It's very self-indulgent and heavy.
I agree.
We're going to have an epic fight now. We need to have an epic piece of music that goes on forever.
Yeah, I mean, I do like the music, but you're right. I don't like it in tandem with the scene.
Right. When you look at Return of the Jedi, when Luke is fighting Vader, they have that music, but it's not long. It's not self-indulgent. It's just long enough.
And it feels perfect.
It's just the right length. It hits a high note that doesn't last too long.
Right.
And that's what makes it good, because it doesn't overstay its welcome. Duel of the Fates does. But
and that's not to bash John Williams. That's
no, I'm not. He's a great... He's one of the greatest film composers that's ever lived.
That's just what he had to work with. When Lucas delivers him a scene that's kind of cool-looking but has no emotion, Williams, unfortunately, is then given the task to give us some emotion, which is very hard to do. You know. But anyway, I agree. Totally.
But...
God, I wish I could remember the music. I totally can't.
Well, when we were working with that music we had previously, I got to listen to it over and over again, and I really started to develop a liking for it. So that's why it's so low on my... Well, so high, however you want to look at that, on my list. So anyway, that's...
Well, that's a perfect number one. It segues right into my number one, which is the immolation scene.
The scene itself?
The scene itself.
You like the way they did that?
I'm not saying it's perfect. What I like about it...
I liked him doing that "I hate you" nonsense.
Yeah, I know you really hate the bit where he's like, "I hate you!" I like that because fucking he just chopped his arms and legs off. Yeah, he's
pissed. There was no reason for him to hate Obi-Wan.
At
that moment, but he always had this resentment for Obi-Wan.
I know that the forced resentment was too much, but I'm not talking about any of that. Just look at it as a scene. The anger that he's feeling is pretty appropriate, given that he just got his limbs cut off. And, I mean, like I said, I don't like everything about it, but what I do like is how intensely graphic and painful this immolation scene is. And
yeah, it is nice.
So brutal.
It is nice. I mean, it's an island in a sea of
a fire and all that.
I mean, it's an island in a sea of nothing. I'm talking about emotion, because I never felt anything.
No.
In any of the prequels. And that was at least a little bit of something, even though I didn't really like it.
Yeah, I mean, I don't like Obi-Wan kind of gives his speech in two halves. The first half was when he talks about Anakin being the chosen one and all. I don't care for any of that. But what I do like is how he says, you know, "You are my brother, Anakin. I loved you." And you see it on Obi-Wan's face. This killed him to have to do this. That he had to stand there and watch his friend. I mean, this all happened recently, you know, in his time frame, that Anakin kind of twisted around very quickly. So it's not a stretch to think that it was very hard for him to watch his friend burn up and scream and be in pain.
"You were the chosen one! It was said that you would destroy the Sith, not join them! Bring balance to the Force, not leave it in darkness! My brother, Anakin! I loved you!
For me, it obviously wouldn't happen because of the original trilogy, but given that you know that he does care for Anakin, despite what he's done, you would think, just to be nice, he'd go over there and just lob his head off and just end this godforsaken thing instead of leaving him there like that. But obviously they had to.
You think they would have done it in a way where Obi-Wan would have assumed
thought
that
he was
dead.
Yeah, I know, but nevertheless.
Well, you know,
what I enjoyed was the graphic nature of Anakin's...
Graphic for the prequel trilogy.
Well, yes. The nature of his, you know, destruction. And Obi-Wan's emotional...
Outpour.
You know, and when he walks off, I mean, he's this has kind of broken him in a way. You know, this was a hard thing to do. And he didn't want to do it, but he was ordered to do it, and he did his job, and he knew that it had to be done. But just that moment, you know, from...
Well, you know, you can't put it all on Obi-Wan. I mean, it was Anakin's fault.
Well, if Anakin hadn't jumped over him...
Obi-Wan was defending himself. Anakin was going to kill him. Obi-Wan had to do
well,
that.
Well, Obi-Wan went to that planet to kill him. And
yes,
Anakin...
but he warned him. He said, don't...
Oh,
jump
in
off
that moment,
floating,
I know he said, don't
whatever.
Do it. I have the high ground.
I have the high ground, and you know I can take
yeah.
it.
Yeah, I know. Oh, in the context of that moment, yes, absolutely. Sure. Anakin just brought it on himself. Mm-hmm. The whole fight prior to that, they seem pretty equally matched as far as skills and whatnot. The only difference is Anakin fought emotionally, whereas Obi-Wan, you know, remained calm, and that's what enabled him to survive this fight, was Anakin was blinded by his emotions, and he did something stupid, and Obi-Wan just waited for the right moment, and he didn't get phased. He was sweaty from the heat, and that was it. Anyway, you know, that's what I like about, you know, like the whole scene is not perfect, but I like the emotion in it. You know, it felt kind of raw, and I like that. But anyway,
I haven't done my number one yet.
Oh yeah, you haven't. Sorry.
My number one. Okay, now you might consider this actually a bit of a cheat, okay? Cheat. But my number one actually doesn't involve anything in the actual movies. I'm talking about something that occurred before the movies actually were in theaters. I'm talking about specifically the teaser trailer for The Phantom Menace.
Uh-huh.
That's what I'm talking about. Do you remember how it felt to see that for the first time?
Oh, hell yeah.
This was a new Star Wars movie. Something we had never seen before.
If you don't tell the story of the trailer, I will, but go ahead. Seeing it in the theater.
I won't. I don't have your story.
No, you were there with me. It's something you said.
Oh, okay. I don't remember this, but anyway.
Yeah, you'll remember when it's
Obviously, it's when we were seeing Wing Commander.
Yeah.
But, yeah, I mean, you remember how it felt to see something new, Star Wars,
oh, yeah.
that we hadn't seen before. And this is like, wow, this is great.
You refer to the prophecy of the one who will bring balance to the Force. You believe it's this boy?
He can see things before they happen.
He can help you.
The Force is unusually strong with him.
He was meant to help you.
Anakin! Tell him to take off!
Will I ever see you again?
What does your heart tell you?
Are you sure about this? Trusting our fate to a boy we hardly know?
Anakin Skywalker, meet Obi-Wan Kenobi.
I sense much fear in you.
The boy is dangerous. They all sense it. Why can't you?
Fear is the path to the dark side. Fear leads to anger. Anger leads to hate. Hate leads to suffering.
We're seeing, we would dissect every image to see
sure.
what's going to be in this movie. And that teaser trailer...
A communications blackout can mean only one thing.
Invasion. That teaser trailer made a bad movie look interesting.
This is a battle I do not
think
that
we can win. Exactly. It made
People
something look good.
Like this.
Okay. It made something that was generally received as not being good and disappointing into something interesting. It
right.
really did what a teaser trailer
yeah, oh, I
should
agree.
Do.
I agree totally.
Tease the hell out of you.
Oh, yeah.
And it made a bad movie look good. And
yes,
I watched this trailer last night just to try to see what it'd be like to see it again. And it took me back in time.
Mm-hmm.
It was like seeing it again for the first time. It made me feel like, wow, there's hope for a movie that I know already sucks.
Yeah,
and it was like going back in time 10 years or wherever,
right,
how long
right.
ago it was when I saw that. So that is my favorite thing about the prequel trilogy. It's actually nothing in the movies themselves, but the actual teaser trailer that occurred before they even came to be.
Right. Well, the story I'm talking about...
Okay, what's your story?
...is when we went to see Wing Commander, and we were excited because we knew the episode one trailer was attached. I don't think this was that there was the, you know, the first trailer that came out. I think this was maybe the second one. The second episode one trailer.
Okay.
There was a couple seconds of something, and then it cut to one of the shots at the transport ships that are ultimately in the beginning. And what we hear is the dun, dun, dun,
dun, dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Now, at this point, I think we had seen the special editions in the theater.
Well, the special editions had already come out. Yeah,
so we had seen those, but still, for some reason, I don't know what it was, that the music was louder, yeah. the subwoofer was harder, I don't know. Because
well, seeing that old particular music applied to something new, yeah.
Yeah, this particular music was all bass, and I remember...
It made you feel like Star Wars.
Exactly, even though that's pretty much what you said. You're all, wow, now that's Star Wars. And it was the music that did it. It wasn't the visuals.
No.
It was knowing that you were watching visuals that were Star Wars, but hearing the music, which just, it was the Imperial March.
Oh, yeah.
And it just screamed Star Wars. And it was the first time you really kind of heard it new, you know, reorchestrated. And it just, it sounded awesome.
Yeah.
And I was just as, it gave me chills, just like it did you.
Well, I'm sure it gave me chills, moment. Too, although I don't remember that particular moment.
Yeah, I remember that.
I remember seeing Captain Panaka in the trailer, and then seeing Captain Panaka in Wing Commander. Do you remember that?
No.
The same actor was in Wing Commander.
No, I don't remember.
They were like, hey, it's Panaka.
No, I don't remember that. But
we didn't call him Panaka back then. We didn't know his name. We called him the guy who says, this is a battle I do not think we can win.
What I remember is, and I've never done this for any other thing, the trailer was, you know, it was such the thing to see. Everyone was so excited that the first trailer had come out, and a couple days had gone by, and one of those morning shows that starts like at 5 a.m. said, hey, we're going to play the Star Wars trailer, the new Star Wars trailer. And I thought, oh, it's another one. It's a new one. And I set my timer. I woke up at 5 in the morning and watched for like 2 hours because they kept teasing you.
Just to see the trailer.
You know, and it turned out to be the same fucking trailer I'd already seen. I was really pissed. But what I did enjoy was that the guy that kind of set us up for the trailer, and he said, okay, everyone, here we are, the trailer for episode one. And here is this dignified kind of news anchor guy going, Star Wars, Star Wars. And he was all into it.
That's cool.
And I enjoyed that, you know. It just shows, you know, it didn't matter how old you were. I mean, this is a guy that was in it just as much as we were. And it was fun. Do we have time for any...
Yeah, best mentions.
Honorable mentions.
Go ahead.
Well, you already mentioned a bit of the music. The music as a whole, not all of it, but some of the music was really good. Like you said, Duel of the Fates, not so much in context.
Well, I like the beginning of episode 3, the drums that start off.
Boom.
Yeah.
Boom. Yeah. Yeah, the music is
kind of... The scene goes
cool.
on way too long.
You can't... I know. You have to really just kind of listen to the score separately, and especially 3 where it starts to reference.
It's kind of like listening to the score of Pearl Harbor.
Yeah.
Great score, but you know that there's...
Yeah. And then also the environments. The locations, even though there's way too much CGI and everything, the speeder chase in episode 2, you know, when Anakin jumps down and all that, you know, that looks really cool. You know, at night with all these cars zipping around, that looked pretty fucking cool.
I guess.
I gotta say, you know, I'm not talking about the scene, how it was cut or anything, which was obviously stupid, but it looked really neat. Coruscant, it looked neat. They opened up Tatooine a little bit.
Well, the names.
Naboo.
The names are ridiculous.
Naboo looked pretty cool. You know, I don't like the underwater ship, but it kind of felt like a real world. You know, a real different world. And it looked like Greece, you know, in 300 years.
It was nice to go to different environments.
Yeah, I just thought that was kind of cool.
If I liked the way they looked, maybe I would have
Even though I didn't like everything about Kamino, you know, in episode 2.
Another ridiculous
thing. It's still kind of cool. You know, here's this kind of planet that's kind of based all on water and all that. It's kind of neat. You know, just the CGI in this particular case was nice because it does allow you to expand and give you kind of a breath that you wouldn't otherwise be able to get. But, okay, that's all. What about yours?
Well, I only had one, actually. Well, two. Obi-Wan Kenobi, which we talked about.
Right.
That was actually just Ewan McGregor. Well, I already mentioned this, Captain Panaka. I like Captain Panaka. I think everybody did. I like the actor who played
Panaka. I wonder why they switched him.
I don't know. Maybe he just refused to be in any other movies.
I doubt it.
I didn't have this written down here, but it's a very small moment in The Phantom Menace during the pod race when the Tusken Raiders shoot at them, shoot at the pods, which lasts about 2 seconds.
Yeah.
I like that. Ooh. ooh, ooh, ooh. You're like, oh wow, that's something cool. Oh, yeah. We're back to the boring pod race again.
Yeah, it was a nice reference to.
But that's so it. Far.
All right, that's cool.
Well, that episode turned out a little better than I thought.
Well, you know, like you said, it was kind of fun to actually point out the things we do like.
Yeah.
Amidst the shit.
So, yeah, we did kind of nitpick, though, anyway.
Well, that's what it takes. All right. Okay, that wraps us up, this fun little episode, delving into one of the things, the Star Wars universe that we do really love. So this is Justin saying goodnight and goodbye.
This is Josh. Goodnight.